Hello and welcome to the Tuesday, October 1st, 2013 edition of the Sands and Storm Center's Stormcast. My name is Johannes Ulrich and I'm today recording from Jacksonville, Florida. Well, I mentioned already that October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month and that we are looking sort of for interesting log entries. Actually, had a discussion here on another mailing list where something like this came up, so I wrote it up for Monday, even though it's not October yet, and that's multipath TCP. Multipath TCP is a feature that has been defined for a while now as an extension to TCP that would allow hosts that have multiple IP addresses to use all of those IP addresses simultaneously to communicate with each other. This is in particular interesting for mobile phones. A mobile phone, for example, may have an IP address assigned by a Wi-Fi network and then an IP address designed by a cellular network, like a 3G or LTE network. As you sort of roam between Wi-Fi and the cell phone network, you don't want TCP connections to actually die and then having them reestablish, and you also want to use the maximum bandwidth, so you want to use both connections. iOS 7 is, as far as I know, the first major operating system that does use multipath TCP by default. Now, in order to actually see the traffic, you need to communicate with a host that supports it, and the one host that apparently does support multipath TCP is Apple's own servers that are used for Siri. So likely if someone on your network is using Siri, you may see these new TCP options that you may not have seen before. Now, I wrote a little bit in this diary how it exactly all works, but just a short summary. During the handshake, you will see a TCP option 30 being used, so that's hexadecimal 30. And then going forward, you will see additional TCP options above 30, so 31, 32, 34, and so on. These options are used to manage these multipath TCP connections. To your firewall, they look just like any other TCP connection. The problem may be that your IDS, for example, doesn't know how multipath TCP works, and as a result now, is no longer able to actually interpret these sessions correctly. As I show in the diary, Wireshark does a reasonable good job in actually interpreting this kind of traffic. TCPDump, on the other hand, at least the version I used, doesn't have this option yet, so it just shows it as an unknown option. And Bitcoin is in the news again, this time for one of the largest Bitcoin pools, Bitcoin Guild, being under a denial of service attack. Now, the way these Bitcoin pools work is that essentially many users get together and combine their computational capacity to mine Bitcoins. This is in some ways encouraged by Bitcoin. The way Bitcoin is issued is that there are certain minimum denominations essentially that are being issued that require quite substantial computational capacity. So as an individual user, you probably would never get to that amount of Bitcoin currency. But by joining a pool, you basically contribute your computational capacity to solve problems for the pool, and you're then given your share of whatever they are mining from Bitcoin. So the Bitcoin pool can actually then accept these larger denominations and split them up into smaller allocations for each one of the participants. The problem is now, because this particular Bitcoin pool is under denial of service attack, that users can't connect to it to actually check in and request new tasks to solve. So overall, actually, the capacity of this Bitcoin pool is substantially reduced. When I just looked before recording this podcast, it looked like the capacity was down by about 30% and still falling. An individual who was able to infect the computer of Misteen USA with spyware and then use its webcam to actually take pictures was arrested and found to have done the same thing. to about 150 additional victims. Just a good reminder here, make sure that you do put all those laptops with cameras, and maybe invest a dollar or two in a little bit of tape or such to cover up the camera if you don't need it. And Panda, the tool to analyze memory images, now gained an interesting new feature to find SSL TLS master secrets in memory. The way this would be used is if you, for example, as part of a forensic investigation, you're looking at some malware or so that exfiltrates data via SSL, you don't have the certificates on the server side, so you can't really decrypt it in hindsight, but you do have a memory image of the infected machine. If you can now pull out those master secrets, you may still be able to decrypt the traffic, just like you're able to do that with the techniques we showed a while ago, where you have Firefox or other browsers record those secrets for you. So interesting for all the forensics people out there if you have to deal with this particular problem. Well, and that's it for today. So thanks again for listening, and talk to you again tomorrow. Bye.